Adam Klasner, it is a privilege and it's close to have you on today. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
It's
Thank
been
you for having me.
we've been working on trying to get it organized and to have this interview for some time, especially that I've been off of interviews for a little bit, but now thank God we made it happen.
Made it happen. It's been a long time in the making. They say with time, good things, they age better. So I guess the podcast that we would have had would have been not
Wouldn't
as
be the same.
exciting as today.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
So when we first were introduced, it was probably over a year or so now, through email, or I got your email. I emailed about the events you had before, Journey to Home, and now you have Anoichi. And I remember my interest in first wanting to get connected is, and as we've chatted about before, just I felt my experiences in meditation retreats and breath work, such as going, like I've shared with before, a silent retreat and Dr. Dispenza's retreats, led me more into Yiddishkeit, into practicing Chassidus. And that led me to, I wasn't so aware that it was in our in Judaism, those events. And so I have a close friend led me to your contact, and I had interest, didn't make it chance get it didn't make it happen yet to go to one of the events, but we
But
have this
still,
relationship.
you want to speak to me.
Yeah, still I want to, and have in mind, because it's also I had such great experiences from those, I guess you could call them secular or retreats, that I felt like helped me with growth. Anyhow, that it's something I want to bring to everybody in the near future as well. And so looking after yourself and modeling after it is a lot to learn. And but with that, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background and what led you into starting these retreats, as well as helping individuals. I believe you have also a coaching practice of sorts, correct? Or
That goes hand in hand with the workshop. It's just sort of expanded into that, started with more so the workshops, and then expanded to people just wanting one-on-one work or more intimate work, and sort of led into that. So naturally involved, and I did end up taking coaching certification courses and was certified as a life coach. And yeah, that's where we're at. But to give you a bit of background, I actually recently did my first podcast not too long ago, which was with Ellie Nash in Florida. And people are starting to become aware of who is Anochi or Anochi Workshops and who is a Adam Klasner, otherwise known as Adam Mordechai, and working with my partner Nachman Fohr. Who is this guy? And there's a good chunk of background over there, but the basic idea is that from a very young age, I've had this desire, where that came from. But the story that always has come up, which led to wanting more, was struggle, which was different struggles. Any struggle that I've had throughout my life has caused me to go into a place where I had to search for more. That's just what was necessary. And so I could go through struggles around my skin, which I've talked about, and the idea of being in pain from that as a kid, having a physical ailment or a sickness that led me to want to heal myself because it was so painful to be in that, or struggles around death, which I've also spoken about. But in general, the idea was is that I had an upbringing and an experience of life where my parents were very much there for me. They're very supportive. They're very much given over to all of our needs. But for some reason, I didn't feel necessarily that I could be completely open and honest with them, vulnerable, and share what was really going on in my life, which caused me to create more of an internal path. So that's the sort of the short, long answer. But the fact that I wasn't able, I didn't have the environment or didn't feel that the environment to be vulnerable caused my own quest for finding out more. And that's really what the pattern of my life has been.
What was
Does that
the,
make sense?
yeah. No, and I do recommend listening to that interview. It was very insightful, and thank you for being vulnerable and sharing all of that, especially for myself. You know, like I mentioned, we've been connected for a little over a year now, and I've been able to talk with you openly, which also been helpful. What would you say was kind of the first, like, what helped you begin to even know about a journey to go inward, let's say? Like, it doesn't necessarily happen to everybody, but
Right.
let's say, like,
Well,
you're speaking of the eczema or the skin disease. And
so again,
yeah.
and as talks about in Chassidus brings out this idea of if a taiva is concussion on a taiva on this idea of a desire, can we really ask that question? Is that a place where we can bring it into the realm of questioning? That's why I said I don't really know where it came from. It's sort of like something inside of me
No,
that.
like, what meaning, like, what led on to the, let's say that desire was always there, but something had to bring it out. Let's say, like, for
Yeah,
myself,
so
you know,
what.
like an injury, but not just an injury that gets you to be like, oh my gosh, like, question your life, but then somebody sends you, hey, you must read this book, or you gotta listen to this, podcast. And was it first then? To that answer, did you first have the kind of growth in Judaism and in Hasidus, or in just like a personal growth, secular kind of aspect?
So, yeah, good question. Why was when I was in grade school, like elementary school, so I learned a lot about what Jewish practice was, and my parents did really good at educating us, but we didn't have a fully religious home. And I was asking questions when I came home because I was learning one thing in school, and I was coming home and asking for another thing. And so the environment didn't line up for me to be able live the religious lifestyle. What really brought me into religion, where it's like almost there's nowhere to turn, which is the beginning of my, so to speak, journey before I became involved in personal development, which there's your answer of religion became before the personal development. But it came at a time where there was nobody to turn to, and it was like the most traumatic experience, which was experiencing my first real death, where I like, but it wasn't at death. It was before death. It was when they were sick, when I had people in my life that were sick, and that's when I turned to God, and I can't explain to you. I started praying 3 times a day, putting on tefillin every day, giving more tzedakah, try to clean up some of my unhealthy habits. It's just like it was like squeezing me. It's like squeezing my soul out of me. And that's where really the religion thing started. There was nowhere to turn. I turned to God, and maybe it was a place out of maybe it was an inauthentic way of turning to God, but that's what led me to God. That's what led me in my path to really like doubling down, like I'm going into this message. So, but then when someone passed away, after they passed away, what the pattern for me was is to disconnect from God, because it's like the reason I was praying and the reason I was going in that direction, because I thought you were going to offer me something here, which was a refuah. And it wasn't, and I was let down. So I really had resentment towards God in that process and anger towards God. Until I was 21 years old, and I was in Eretz Yisrael, remember, and I went to an Eishet Torah program because I had gotten this free trip, and I thought, hey, why not? And I just had spent the summer in Israel, and then I didn't go to any classes. I didn't enjoy going to any classes whatsoever, and then my bubby had a stroke. But now the difference this time was when I was going out for New Year's, and she had a stroke, and I was like, that's when I turned to God. That's when I went to the Kotel. That's when I put on tefillin. But the difference this time about her and her sickness was she lasted a lot longer, so I had more time to integrate the message of becoming religious and really learning about it. And when she passed away, it stuck with me. I just stayed, and I had already had enough time, it was 2 years, to sort of integrate that message. And so maybe you could say that was God's favor of letting me hold on longer to that message, but I still had to work through the pain around that death again, which always caused me to disconnect.
What tools did you have at that time? Because you said the first was growth into in a religious aspect. You have the prayer, but like, did that help you sit with them? A lot of the language we use to, sit with the emotions and process it.
So it was a safety. It was a place of it was a safe place to turn to. I felt like my words mattered and they were being heard, and I couldn't explain it, but there's no necessary not necessarily processing of experiences or processing emotions, but sort of escaping to a someone who could take care of me, someone who could be there for me. And I felt that God could do that.
Well, did that journey then ever lead to a, let's say, type of book or a meeting with somebody that then began to introduce you to the tools of meditation and breath work that you now teach and teach at the events?
So not at all, actually. And but here's the interesting thing. You see, I got into all these personal development type programs. I've gone to the Tony Robbins, his event. I became a Tony Robbins coach. I went to
While
his.
you were like already kind of
This was already where I was from. This was later in the day. I'm just fast forwarding a bit, but if we go
Wow.
back, so my father shows me on his bookshelf that he had these Tony Robbins personal power cassettes. And
Yeah.
he's like, see, I already started the path. And I sort of believe that as well, that a lot of his search and a lot of his quest, my father specifically, was I sort of picked up the baton and continued that. I feel like there's a lot of clues and traces from the past that was already sort of in me, where I say I can't describe it to you. It's just is me. It's just a part of me. It's just who I am. It's just from the early DNA programming that this is who we are. This is what a Klasner is. At least I believe that. And but those tools actually came, or those desire for personal development came, because I found myself in a situation where I almost put myself in a situation, and I don't want to say like that exactly, because I'm talking about my marriage. I'm talking about me marrying my wife, who had two kids at the time. And because I took on something that was way above my pay grade, way above something that I was able to handle, but it's like my soul was gravitating towards, I need to go there. It's like where I need to be. And believe you me, I'm very satisfied, I could say today, with the choice that I made. But with that came a lot of struggle, a lot of challenge. And I was really 5 years in where I was faced in a situation where there was nowhere to turn. And as I mentioned, there was no vulnerability at home. So I couldn't really open up and share what my struggle was. I felt too much pride. I'm not going to tell anyone what's going on with me. Tell someone what's going on with me. To make like everything's okay. I'm the one that said, Dad, Mom, I can handle a woman with two kids for sure. So now I'm going to turn to them. So, and I really wasn't even open to wanting to do anything about it. I just felt like I just had to continue and push along until I had some good friends who introduced me to this program that called the Shofar that I went on. And literally, that program, I can tell you today, saved my life. And when I say save my life, like, who knows where I would be today? Would I be married? Would I be religious today? And what that program taught, and this was the base of everything, which is what I was in search for this entire time, going back to my child, is the truth of who I am. Gave me the tools to be able to have a real approach at finding myself. And can I say I found myself? Well, not necessarily. I think that's the journey of life, is continuously finding deeper layers of yourself, because we're infinite beings, if you believe that.
What was, I want to retract a little bit because you mentioned even when you were, let's say, observant already, you were going to, let's say, Tony Robbins retreats. How it seems that a lot of people think that they're two separate worlds in a sense that if like how could, I guess my question is how were you able to go to that while being observant, like, and second part to that, was there any fear of any traces of, often there's the thing that comes up nowadays if somebody's getting into meditation, breath work, or anything, and they're Jewish, there's the concern, of avodah zarah, whatever that means, of idol worship.
Yeah, so good question. And I think this is a personal question for everyone, because I think whatever you do in life, there's a very simple premise for how we approach life, and that's aseh l'chaverecha, make for yourself a mentor, someone who could check you, keep you in check, that when you ask a rav, when I say Rav, I mean rabbi that you've appointed that can be appointed to be in that position to make decisions for you, is you're giving those tough decisions where you're not sure over to somebody who is literally taking accountability for your spiritual health. And so someone has someone like that in their lives, and they've appointed someone, then they can be
Disgusting.
rest assured that they're going to find a path. And for me, I've had that. So that would be the personal answer. And the second thing is in that same quote, is k'nei l'chaver, is to acquire for yourself a friend. Now, acquiring a friend is actually a stronger language, because you have to give out some money sometimes. And I think what a friend's today, that's a good friend, is someone who can hold you accountable to the truth. So sometimes when you ask a Rav, you can ask them whatever you want to ask them,
Yeah.
right? You can ask them whatever you want to ask them. What you don't want to ask them, that's what you're probably going to ask a good friend who can hold you accountable, someone who can see your a little bit more of the insides of what's going on. And so we have to have those things in place. We have to have accountability to people, and we have to have accountability to spiritual powers, or the powers that be, to guard our health. Now, when it comes to those programs, so I did ask to go on any of these programs that I went on. And yeah, that's a day when I was searching myself for what I thought wasn't available in, let's say, Hasidus or any other type of the mystical wisdom of what Judaism and Torah has to offer, is I really thought there was good there. And the famous story of the Hasidim that are walking and discussing, which of their countries is the best for Judaism. And they all say there are different reasons. And then they go to the Friedrich Rebbe and they ask him, what's the best one? Is my country, my country? He says, everything good comes from God, so everything good in those systems came from Torah. So we can take good from other places, and has helped me a lot, these practices and messages that I got. And unfortunately, I wasn't necessarily always looking in the most authentic to me places. I found a lot of good there. So yeah, and that would be my answer. I wouldn't say yes, I wouldn't say no. I'd say you got to know you.
Well, there's kind of goes, you really have to trust. It's actually a theme that's been coming up a few times now, even in my recent podcast interviews, whether it's about shidduchim, dating, or something else, somebody often brings up, you have to say that you have to acquire or you have to make yourself a rav and acquire a friend. But for something like this, let's say, and any kind of workshop, how do you have the trust in this other person if they haven't done it themselves?
So when you say they haven't done it themselves, what do you
Let's
mean
say
by
like
that?
this, I don't know you, your Rav at what time was, but he probably didn't go on a Tony Robbins retreat.
So good question. So my Rav recently passed away, Chalav Shalom, and I
Michonne.
only speak again of him, is that he took whatever information I gave him and he went with that, but he was a very holy man, so whatever he did say, I went with that full trust. And I think there are people like that that we can fully trust them in that capacity. We can
You really have
fully
to
trust.
provide the right, like enough information then, though.
Yeah, but I'm talking about even today, which is a controversial topic, but the idea of psychedelics, I would say there are certain rubs. Or a rav that are giving without themselves doing it. And I don't think it's always the worst thing. Again, I'm not going into how I feel about psychedelics. That's not what this podcast is about. But they would give heterim for people to go and do that. So do they always need to go there? I mean, did the Rebbe leave? And I'm not comparing my rav to the Rebbe, but did the Rebbe leave New York to know what was going on in Eretz Yisrael? And so when someone is completely given over to the mission and they're just flowing. They're just flowing with the information that they need. It just comes to them. So that's what I mean by a rav, someone who's put themselves in the position to be fully aligned to God.
One of the things I found a little different, kind of some often, maybe an inward journey when it comes to meditation and there's retreats and as I felt it was guiding me and leading me into wanting to practice more of a Orthodox Chabad lifestyle, different elements, like you said, there are the good to take from it. But there are different elements, let's say, from those other workshops or retreats. We could say like the music they play to help inspire you into the breath work or the meditation, start to bring up different, like on just let's just say a discomfort, an uncomfortability. How do you decipher between if it's just the body resisting change, as we know, like when in the process of transformation, the body, body is becomes a mind, and it throws any thought at you just to keep you from doing work because it wants to stay in the familiar habits, or if it's actually a nudge from your neshama, your soul, being like, this isn't aligned with me anymore. I want something. It's like there's a better way. Like, take the good from this, but then there's different music to use. Instead of, I don't know, like a church song or something like that.
Or let's just say a woman singing, Felicia.
Yeah.
So look, that becomes an internal question again, because it's what's the most authentic part of a person at the end of the day is the emotion. It's the most authentic part, right? This is me thinking about my experience of life. This is me experiencing it. So my emotions end up becoming a messenger of the truth. Emotions are called the mirror of the soul. That's what it is. And how are they a mirror of the soul? Well, if you think about it, an emotion doesn't have words. There's no words to an emotion. As soon as someone's speaking, they're not in the emotion anymore. An emotion in its rawest form is like a baby. A baby's crying, right? So a baby's screaming and crying. There's no words to it. It's the most primal part of us. It's something that we could trace all the way back to the beginning of ourselves. And in a certain sense, in the progression of a person's life, There's the pre-verbal communication, and then there's the verbal communication. The verbal happens over here. The pre-verbal happens over here. And the pre-verbal is sounds more like a soul-like experience, doesn't it? Because the soul doesn't have words, because the soul can't be limited to words. The neshama can't be limited to words. Osius. There's no dibur for a soul, so it comes, it nudges you. It's a sensation. There's something gnawing at you. There's something. And so now I got to become in touch with what's that communication? What's being said over here? So is it coming from here where I'm thinking that this thing is the issue in front of me? Oh, I don't like that type of music. And that's my own resistance to doing work. Could very well be. I don't know. It depends how sensitive you are to your own experience. Or is it, I legitimately feel uncomfortable that this is not aligned with who I am. And so I can tell you that I've gone through a progression in my own music life where there was those musics of, let's say, Kol Isha, and I'm talking about even within me doing these workshops. And now it's gone to a place of 100% connected to Jewish music because I'm more aligned to that message. Meaning, as I'm learning and as I'm knowing, as I'm understanding that the song, the niggun, is connected to the soul. That's why you can hear the same speech 100 times. But by the second or third, you're getting bored. But when it comes to a niggun, you can hear it 100 times and you can generate the same feeling. So it's a communication that's happening deep in my soul. And that's why it's associated with a feeling. So a niggun or a song is very much connected to a deeper dimension of who we are. So what do I want to attach that to? That's what it becomes. So now if I was at a different place and I was valued and emotion and all that stuff, and it was good for the breathing and so on and so forth. That's just because where I was at. So my work and what I put out there, as you're saying, and just what I put out there to my people of how I do the work, is the work that I'm doing on myself. So as I'm getting more aligned to those type musics, so is my workshop. It's just what happens. Because the workshop is an authentic place. It's me being my authentic self. It's me showing up as my own work that I'm doing on myself. And
Imagine.
whoever, and like you said, whoever's workshop you go to, you're going to take from them. You're taking they become the opening of your personal development experience. So who do you want to take that from? And I'm not saying this is not like take it from me. I'm the only guy. There's many, many offerings out there. It's just you got to know that yourself, who you need to take from,
Who's the
who's the one that's
mashpia in a
supposed to get.
sense? Yeah, it's important, like you say, because we become more sensitive. I can imagine. I'm curious now the type of music the did I spend some time because I felt the change with what music, let's say, was aligned with meditations. I would just meditate in the silence. But then it was, returned and introduced a different kind of music, and it really does enhance the different experience that you want to have or visualization. So I'm curious what Jewish music you found that helps also foster different emotions of inspiration and motivation, such as like when you're doing a breath work, you need some, you want something that's really going to get you to like give it effort, so to speak.
So first thing is meditation, breath work, very different practices. And the way I've related to it and to so people can understand from a Jewish context is praying is me talking to God, let's say. That's what prayer is. Prayer isn't sitting in silence. Prayer is putting something out there. It's reaching on high. I'm coming from down here and going up there. Meditation is listening to God. It's listening to the message. It involves a process of being silent, being still with myself, and listening to the message that's being communicated that's coming up. So if you would compare that to the breath, it would be like the inhale is the meditating, because I'm taking in a message. It's breathing, we're taking in. And the exhale is letting go to a message. So I'm giving out a message to God. I don't know if that's correct. I sort of just made that part up, but I think that when it comes to activating, not activating, it really depends on the facilitator again. Because my form of breath work is, and the way I do it is, I have different staples that I use, and sometimes I just play simply instrumental and the same track running through that people could just focus on their breath and really to let people know that a lot of the breakthrough, especially in breath work, which I know we didn't even talk about yet, but the idea of it is simply being able to focus on your breath and repeat that pattern. Keep on doing it. And don't stop and see along the way, as you're doing that, how much resistance comes up. Like people are like, they're breathing. It's really what, and I'll just give a quick thing, is breathwork is, and what we're referring to, not just breathing or breathing practices, different than transformational breathwork, or sometimes referred to as holotropic breathwork. These type experiences involve a consistent circular breathing pattern, generally through the mouth, right? So I'm going in, and you do that for 45 minutes. Let me tell you something, that if you want to learn about yourself, try doing that for 45 minutes. Because what you're going to learn is, the first thing that's most likely going to come up is my resistance to actually doing that. So my resistance is sometimes when I've agreed to do that, let's say I've agreed to do breath work. So now I'm lying on the ground and I'm breathing. But my resistance, oh, the floor is not comfortable. Oh, the music isn't good. Oh, the people in the room are going to make fun of me. Oh, I'm not comfortable with the facilitator. And just different uncomfortabilities are going to come up that are going to cause me to resist that process.
That's why the previous question was also quite important, though, because you may be trying to push through it, one of those things, when it might actually just be not aligned with your soul.
Right. So as I'm going through that, and why I say breath, because just when we're talking about soul as well, is that's our interaction. That's how we got the soul connected to the body, was that God breathing through Adam Harishan's nostrils, and he gave him life that way. So we're going back to life. We're going back to life force. And as we're doing that, as we're going into our own life, as we're bringing the breath into our own life and experiencing it, there's resistances that come up to really be aligned to who I am. So there's the thinking, there's the physical discomfort, and some people get really emotional. And it's just really hard to get to a place of pure relaxing and be in complete serenity with who I am. It's really hard to get there. Not many people could say that I'm there, because once you say I'm there, you're not there. So it's an experience rather than a concept in my mind.
The resistance, you know, often comes up when we're practicing breath work, and also differentiating between breath work and meditation. Even though, at least my familiarity with breath work is using that as the beginning of a meditation, as like an inducer to get into a, you know, slower brain state. But anyways, please continue.
I mean, breathing in its most ultimate form, if you want to say it in that or those words, is there to, as a tool, is there is a tool that if I want to go into a mode of relaxation, I can relax. If I want to get energy for something, I can get energy for something. But breath work primarily is used for transforming I guess yourself. And when I say transform yourself, I mean, think about all the layers of resistance we have just being ourselves. Think about how when somebody walks into a room, I have to scan them up and down just to know everything about them. And you have all your judgments and all your ideas about who this is or where you know them from, or then you're going to go to your friend, who's that guy? Who's that guy? Who's that guy? Why are we so worried? This guy came into a room. So we're trained that we can't just be in life. And so what breath work gives us, it's like a tool to get to ourselves, to being okay in any moment, any situation. It's one of those tools, one of those processes. So when you're doing breath work, what comes up is all the things that don't allow you to be you. And sometimes the resistance comes in the form of me thinking that the music isn't for me. Because in reality, I mean, sometimes also, which you would go into a mall and you're going to be listening to music, you're not going to run out of the mall, and you're just going to go with your internal process of what you came there for. So we're not necessarily saying that we're inviting it, but sometimes as it comes up, just recognize that people can do work in almost any circumstance. The work becomes about me, not about necessarily the environment. Again, I'm not talking about going into a completely tumidic environment. I'm saying there are levels. Make sense?
Yeah, no, there's just the difference. Like, if you're going to a mall, you have a purpose and you're not paying attention, ideally, even though it's subtly affecting you, the music. But if you're going to do a intense experience of going inward, maybe the question is more so, if you're sensitive to your soul, maybe those things won't even allow you to go as deeper to yourself.
Maybe those things wouldn't guide you to be in that environment. Who knows?
Yeah. Anyhow,
And
good to consider.
again, I think it's everyone's personal journey, and I'm not here to tell you how to do your journey. I'm saying do it the way that you believe is true to you.
Yeah.
Right? There's how many million Jews in the world, how many billions of people in the world. And everyone's their own unique expression of how they're doing that thing. Right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be needed.
How do you say when it these tools, let's say meditation and breath work, when experiences are very powerful and you can get so into making it part of your routine, how do you keep it as a tool and not being like trapped in it? Like it can become almost an obsession, or it can become routine. Or you can make limitations, speaking from experience. Oh, it has to be for this amount of time, or it has to be at this time of the day.
I think what it comes down to is who's the person behind the experience. It's not about the thing itself or keeping the thing in check. It's about knowing yourself and your relationship to the thing that you're involved with. So if I'm involved in meditation, and if I don't do meditation, then I won't be able to have a good day. Well, then you're not living in reality. Because sometimes there's going to be days that you can't do it. I'm speaking about, let's say, Jewish prayer, there are certain times because it seems very limiting sometimes. Seems like it could be like, oh, why do I have to pray this time and that time? Why do I have to do it 3 times a day? But when it comes to those things which are intentional, which are God-given, so to speak, commandments, those are just times in every single day that you have a portal to connect to that which you're looking to connect to. So here's your opportunity. This is your time. This is your availability to connect to that message, to go all in that space where you can be vulnerable and you can ask and you can put yourself out there and you can praise. That's an energetic channel. When it comes to meditation, which is a tool, not necessarily as a spiritual practice, but more so to get me more aligned to spirit, described in the rest of the world, is it's a tool to get me to connect more to myself. When we're talking about mitzvahs, or things that do have bounds and restrictions, so to speak. Those are details in which God has told us our ways of we us having portals to the other world, so to speak. And oftentimes, spiritual practice or mitzvahs are confused with other spiritual type practices, which you call meditation, and you can even say breath work, or some people can say psychedelics or whatever. Those aren't spiritual practices. Those are ways for me to get in touch with all those things that have covered me up to really feeling aligned to who I am. But it's not spiritual practice. A spiritual practice is and can only be, in my opinion, and I don't know why we went here, God-given. Can only be God-given. There's a distinction. And I don't know who which audience this is going out to, but I'm just putting it out there like that because that's what I believe.
So all this, so these tools are,
Tools.
they are just, yeah, but also a
Tools.
means to an end.
Yeah, the famous example is are you going to praise the axe
Actually, with the hand and.
or the one that's chopping the
Yeah,
tree
I think
using the
I had to
axe?
learn that. I had to learn that personally, you know, through some discomfort because, you know, I think I'm very disciplined in a sense that, you know, I couldn't handle the fact that you were saying earlier, there are going to be some days you can't do it. And I used to be, well, what do you mean? I would just wake up earlier or do what I can to do it. But no, then there's also the aspect of importance of sleep. So.
And what about that thing makes me complete that I can be the person that I can be? Sometimes you're not gonna have that. Like I just had my wife just broke her foot recently, and my schedule changed. My availability to go out to Minyan changed. My wife breaks her foot, and I have nine kids, seven at home. So the practice changes. I'm still davening, but I'm not going to Minyan.
Have to be
So
adapt. Wow.
life calls us into different experiences. And I think the most godly thing about life is being able to find God even in the places where we think he would be less available. So if I think, and I'm not saying we should go out and from the onset do that, like from the onset say I'd rather daven alone, or I'd rather pray alone because I want to find God in those harder places. But recognize that you can find him there, and recognize your thinking when you're doing things that are subpar, or you didn't meditate today, or you didn't do this today. Recognize the self-talk. Recognize the thoughts that are in your head around what you're doing.
You might just be hard on yourself. You're saying.
Yeah, because there's some point, and people become very attached to their thinking. I think that's the biggest addiction today in the world is our thinking, what we think about all day, every day. Because you say you have 80,000 th or 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day,
Yeah, 90% of the same.
and 90% are the same. But here's the cool thing, is you have 20 to 30,000 breaths a day. Now, if I could learn to use my breath to slow down my thoughts, well, I could start to become aware that I am the thinker of my thoughts. When we're spinning in our thoughts because they're so addictive, because there's so much, it's think about it, it's traveling three times the speed of your breath. So each moment, each breath, I'm breathing in three thoughts. So if I'm breathing in three thoughts unconsciously, that's a lot. That means each breath has to hold three thoughts. So if it has to hold three thoughts, that's overwhelming. Already I'm playing at a disadvantage. It's three versus one. My life, I slow it down, I take a deep breath, and I start to recognize that I'm the thinker of those thoughts. I am the thinker of my thoughts. If I could start to pay attention to that, I could recognize there's work to do here. Instead of just going to those automatic judgments or those automatic, if I didn't do this, then who am I?
Yeah.
Oh, I woke up late. Oh, I wasted an hour. Okay. Recognize who you want to be. Make steps and movements towards that. But recognize also the
Yes.
talk that is in your head around what you just did. Because if you tell yourself that you're a loser, I can guarantee you that you're going to become a loser.
Yeah. Really seems a all about, a theme. I've the constant theme of learning for myself is just embracing greater and greater levels of this flexibility and adaptability, and be able to learn these tools, go all in, and then what exactly you said, they're tools. It's challenging because sometimes you can be disciplined, be like, I have, even when like it's kind of simple, it seems easier when in a situation where things come up that don't allow you to have the certain practice. But even just on a normal day when you could wake up earlier or make time to do something, but really maybe you shouldn't. Maybe have a little bit more ease, do something different.
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is there's a famous concept in Chassidus, as Lubavitcher say, but it depends on your audience. Chassidus says, it brought this quote. It's a quote from Gemara Tainus. It says, La'olam yehe adam rach kekaneh. A person should work on being flexible like a reed
Yeah. It's a, it's,
and
yeah.
not stubborn like a cedar. And when it's referring to that, what Chassidus describes is it's the idea of that if I can be flexible, what I really think it's talking about when it's saying that is called response flexibility. Where response flexibility means that again, God doesn't come in only certain forms. It has to be this way, but I can see God in many ways. I can meet God just by walking in the street and seeing someone. I can meet God by having a tough day. I can meet God. And when we don't have response flexibility, well, why don't we have response flexibility? Because here's why. In life, and I recently just talked about this concept with, and I actually put it up on my Instagram. I was this idea, but there's, because we just experienced it in the parsha, there's something happens to you. Something happens to you that's called the circumstance, the data of life. You're walking into an experience. So you come into your kitchen and your kid is pulling the milk out of the fridge and it spills everywhere. So that's what happened. That's the circumstance. Nobody can deny that. We all saw it. It's on video camera. It's all good. The next thing is, what's my response to that? Now, when I say response, generally, for people today, there's no response. It's a reaction. And a reaction means that I've been cut off from the ability to have a look at what's happening, a look at myself, and a look at my thinking around what's happening. I've lost that flexibility. I go immediately to reaction, which means, in a certain sense, I'm traumatized. Meaning, and then you'll tell the person, why did you just yell at your kid for spilling the milk? Because let's say that's my reaction. I yell at my kid for spilling the milk. Why is that your reaction? What are you talking about? They're going to double down now. Their thinking is, you know how many times I told them not to take the milk out of the fridge? You know how many times I've gone through this process? You can't imagine how many milks that I've had to waste it, but you just destroyed your kid, buddy. And they double down and they justify it because there's no response flexibility. But what if I can be open to the fact that my anger about my child spilling the milk has nothing to do with my child? It has to do a lot with me. Then the inner process starts, where I can start to see myself and work on myself and recognize how I'm showing up. recognize how I'm relating to reality. And if I can recognize how I'm relating to reality, I'm now removed a little bit from my thinking and my reactions to life. I develop that response flexibility, which is really my free choice. That's what it means to have free choice. It's when we think that we've lost the ability to respond to this and we need to react to this, that our bechira is lost, our free choice is lost. We no longer have free choice anymore. And I'm living and I'm a slave and I'm a victim to circumstance. And that's what the Jews were. They were a slave and a victim to circumstance. They were slaves, and all they knew was Mitzrayim. All they knew was a slave type mentality. So when they came to the sea and it was time to cross, there was a certain pact of Jews that said, no, I'm not going forward. I'm going back to Mitzrayim. We need to go back. And there was, you say, how could it be? It's because they were living still connected to the trauma. They were living still connected to the limited consciousness, and consciousness exists between what happens to me and my reaction to it. That's where consciousness exists. That's where free will exists. That's where God exists. That's where my ability to be godly, to create a moment exists. And it's up to me to be able to find it there. But it's when circumstances are so tough and so brutal and so overwhelming and so heavy and so traumatic that we lose that response flexibility. We lose that touch with consciousness, that touch with God, that touch with higher self, that touch with possibility. And that's really what we train people to do. That's really, in a nutshell, everything that I preach and I teach is that. Find the truth of every situation. And to top that off is like the idea of Anoichi means there's Ani, which is I, right? I is the I. And the Chaf is representative, as Hasidus says, is Keser. I'm connected to higher consciousness. So I brought the Keser into me. I'm an integrated person. And I live from that place of knowing that no matter how dark, no matter how dirty, no matter how whatever the situation may be, I can never lose touch with who I really am. That's what we try to teach. And Anoichi is also an Egyptian word. Most people don't know. It's an Egyptian word because it had to go down to the lowest place of consciousness. It goes down to the lowest place of consciousness because God is everywhere. Really. And it's us that need to recognize that message. And ultimately, that's what I stand for as a person that believes in Chabad, as this concept of taking Mashiach as a concept and living it, bring it down, integrate it, make it real. And that's what the Lubavitcher Rebbe gave to all of us. And that's why we're here. We're trying to spread the goods, give back the goods to the people so they know who they are. Because that's what the Rebbe did all day, every day. And we got to be connected to that message.
Well, thank you, Adam, for coming on and sharing all this. Obviously, there's a lot more I'd love to discuss, whether it's on air or off air. So I look forward to continuing our relationship, and God willing, one of these days experiencing one of your retreats and learning and continuing to learn from you and all that you're helping everybody that comes to your retreat or hasn't yet, or just also in any encounter, being able to live each moment more and more.
Thank you very much. Thanks for asking me to come on and listening to me so well. You're a great listener.
Oh, thanks.
Thanks for this opportunity. Take care, brother.